Is it possible to live a constructive, ethical, and happy life without believing in God? Our guest this hour says yes. Do you? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with the author of Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart, Rewriting the Ten Commandments for the 21st Century. And we will welcome your questions and views on the values and beliefs of atheists. And why? Why do you think atheism is on the rise in the United States, especially among young people? Are you concerned about that trend or not? And why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. John Figdor is a humanist chaplain serving the atheist, humanist, and agnostic communities at Stanford University. He holds a Master of Divinity degree from the Harvard Divinity School. He is co-author of Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart, Rewriting the Ten Commandments for the 21st Century. And he joins us from California. Thank you very much for getting up extra early. We appreciate it.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk a little bit about why. Why do you think atheism is on the rise in the United States?
That's a great question. So let's first start out with some data to talk about why the atheist population is on the rise. In the past year, polling from Gallup and Pew have pegged the number of secular Americans at 20% or 30% or 32% of people under the age of 30. But really interestingly, just this month, polling data from Barna.org, which is a religious polling group, found that 38% of Americans are unchurched by the definition of they don't attend churches, synagogues, or mosques. They don't pray except for at weddings and funerals and things like that. And this number is an astonishingly high number. 38% of Americans living essentially secular lives is an unheard of number in our history. And for those of us who are non-religious, who are atheists, humanists, agnostics, we're really excited that more and more people are feeling comfortable coming out of the closet as non-religious.
You put everybody together there, atheists and agnostics and humanists. Are they all the same?
Sure, that's a great question. A lot of people don't understand what the differences between the terms are. So an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God. That's all it entails. Agnosticism actually doesn't even address the question of belief, but addresses the question of degree of belief. So you can be an atheist and be an agnostic simultaneously. That means you're someone who thinks that it's probably true that there is no God, but you don't claim to have absolute knowledge of the fact. And then the last word, humanist, humanism focuses on what we do believe. It focuses on the positive and beliefs and values of the atheist agnostic community. And that's what we really think is most important. There have been so many books about what atheists don't believe throughout the years that we saw a need to write a book about the positive beliefs and values and to answer the question, what things do atheists believe in?
Well, we'll get to those, but 38%, according to this recent survey, in this category, why do you suppose this is?
Sure, or even more astonishingly, I believe it's 48% of people under the age of 30 in that same poll, which is an astonishingly high number. Now, I think there's a number of reasons why this might be the case. I think one of the most classic explanations for this has been the rise of the internet led to greater connectedness and made it possible for people who were from small towns where they thought, I'm the only atheist, to meet hundreds, thousands of other atheists out there and learn that they're not alone in their beliefs. I also think the internet made it possible for people to access the writings of kind of these non-believers in a lot of places where you're able to watch videos of Christopher Hitchens' debates or read his books, and this access to information has really helped people form their beliefs.
Yeah, I don't know. Should there be any concern whatsoever that nearly half of the young people in this poll are not believing in God?
No, I certainly don't think we should be concerned. I think it's actually a really great thing. One of the things that Lex and I really want to to show people is that atheists and humanists are just like religious people at the end of the day. They have a moral compass that's informed by their experiences and their values. They care about each other. That we're basically very similar to religious people, except that we don't believe in God and we reject the faith claims of religion.
Yeah. So what do atheists believe?
Sure. So atheists believe in things like science is the best way to understand the natural world. One of the strongest reasons, why I think there are more non-believers now, is that the conflict between religion and science is becoming ever more clear. As we see patriarchal religious organizations that stand in the way of stem cell research, we continue to see ways in which religion can be an obstruction to education and towards doing more research on some of these things that really matter to us as a species. We also believe in things like everyone wants to live a happy life at the end of the day. We pursue things that make us happy, and we avoid things that make us unhappy. And we believe that morality is a matter of squaring your own preferences and desires and your own happiness with the interests of others. So there's a lot of things that atheists believe. And if there's any one you want to jump into in further detail, I'm happy to discuss it with you.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about this. There are those who are believers who, you know, they believe in the afterlife. They believe if they lead a good, you know, a moral religious life, that they are going to be rewarded in the afterlife with everlasting life. What do atheists believe along those lines?
So one thing about the afterlife is, as soon as someone says, "I know what happens after you die," we have to ask them, well, why do you think you know that? And so far, I've never heard any credible information about the afterlife from another person. It's possible an afterlife exists. I don't think it's very probable to this. You know, I mean, I also think it's possible that God exists. I just think that's extremely improbable as well. I just don't think the afterlife is terribly compelling. And it creates all sorts of problems. I mean, the Greeks in classic culture, they understood the problems with immortality. If you live forever, forever, that's a long time, and anything will become boring given infinite time. So there is a certain kind of curse of immortality that I don't think people have fully thought through.
Yeah. So what keeps the atheist or the non-believer moral and not just hedonistic and doing, you know, everything just for personal pleasure and gain?
Sure. I think that we're moral because we care about other people, and because we understand that morality is a constructive enterprise where we feed into the system and we get something out of it. So one view with the subjective view of ethics is that ethics is a constructive project, that basically human beings come together and form agreements with each other. And these agreements basically determine the early moral framework. This is something referred to as the social contract school of thought, although it's also been defended by people like Professor Axelrod in his research into the evolution of cooperation. And this is the tit-for-tat game theory research that shows that ultimately nice strategies that play fairly, that treat others equally, that don't try to sneakily cheat people, that these fair systems over the long run work out way better than systems that might in the short run seem to do better, but in the long run end up being disastrous failures.
So why do you think we should rewrite the Ten Commandments for the 21st century, the subtitle of the book? What's wrong with the Ten Commandments as they are?
Sure. Well, we wrote the original Ten Commandments before we understood a number of things. We didn't understand the germ theory of disease. We didn't understand evolution. We didn't understand astrophysics. We didn't understand how people become ill. I mean, we really didn't know much when we wrote the Ten Commandments, and they're an okay first draft, but our knowledge has advanced since then. In the context in which the Bible was written, slavery was justified. Slavery was legit, and there are passages in the Bible that talk about how to treat slaves properly. We don't live in that context anymore. In fact, to us, it seems ridiculous that anyone ever kept people as literal farm equipment. It's just ridiculous in our modern view of ethics. And so we can see that our ethical view changes over time, whether it's with respect to the end of slavery or whether it's in a more recent thing, the giving women the right to vote. For a long time, we thought women shouldn't be able to vote, which is, again, by our modern lights, a crazy viewpoint.
Yeah, well, I guess we can try to go through some of the 10, actually, it says the 10 non-commandments in the material about the book. Are they non-commandments or commandments?
See, this is exactly what we were referring to. It's important that people not perceive this as a replacement for the 10 commandments, as, you know, Lex and I are saying everyone has to follow our 10 beliefs. Nothing could be further from what we're talking about. In fact, in our view, what's most important is using the tools that we provide in the book, using the framework that we talk people through to discover your own beliefs and analyze your own beliefs. So the reason we call them non-commandments is to refer to two things. The fact that you don't have to take them. In fact, if you generate a different list of 10.
Uh-oh, I think we might have lost our guest somehow. Maybe just a cell phone drop-off. So you know what we'll do? We will try to call John Figdor back and reestablish our connection. And we will take your phone calls and your thoughts and views on this. John Figdor is the author, co-author of Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart, Rewriting the Ten Commandments for the 21st Century. And he is telling us why atheists should be defined by what they believe in, not what they don't believe in. And talking about why it is more than possible to lead a constructive and happy and moral life without believing in God. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is John Figdor, a humanist chaplain who serves the atheist, humanist, and agnostic communities at Stanford University. He is the co-author with Lex Baer of Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart, Rewriting the Ten Commandments for the 21st Century. We welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We lost our telephone connection with you, John Figdor, just before the break. Let's talk a little bit. You're saying you don't have to follow your non-commandments, but if you're a non-believer, come up with your own?
Yes, I'm so sorry for that drop-off.
No, that's
so
right.
What I was saying is that one of the strongest differences between our 10 non-commandments and the 10 commandments is they literally carved the 10 commandments into stone, and we certainly don't think that's a good idea. In fact, we think that our non-commandments ought to evolve with the time and change with the evidence. And as I mentioned previously, if we were stuck in this mode of thinking that one set of 10 commandments is perfect forever and is eternal and will never need to change, we would be stuck thinking things like slavery is justifiable and women shouldn't have the right to vote and other things like that. And that just doesn't make sense. We ought to be willing to change our minds with the evidence. And as soon as we learn new information that might change our minds, we ought to be open to change based on that.
Yeah. Are there any, though, universal ethical principles that would apply to all people regardless of religion? I mean, you know, thou shalt not kill or steal or lie or do things that harm others?
So that's an interesting point. So this is the question of, can there be an absolute morality? And our view is that all you can have is maximal subjectivity, that you actually couldn't have objective morality, because even if you polled every human being who had ever lived and you asked them, what's your opinion of murder? What's your opinion of arson? You know, are these things right or wrong? And we got every human being ever to agree on something, that wouldn't make it objective. That would just make it something that everyone subjectively agrees is important. And that's part of what we think is most important, is to understand that ethics is subjective. It's based off of your preferences, desires, skills, talents, your own basic experience.
The first of your 10 non-commandments, the world is real, and our desire to understand the world is the basis for belief. So what does that mean exactly, and why is this a significant non-commandment?
So we put this in there because there was a view that became very popular in the mid-90s, popularized by a film called The Matrix, which had it that maybe the world is not real, and maybe, in fact, we're all living a computer simulation, or maybe not a computer simulation, but that reality is just a mental projection. And Lex and I think that this is an interesting idea, and it certainly has produced interesting films and interesting stories, but we just don't think it's reality. We think that there's one reality that we all live in, and we perceive it differently due to differences in our perception, the fact that we access this reality through our fallible senses, our sight, hearing, et cetera, all those.
And just skipping to number five, there is no God.
Sure, nothing controversial in the morning, huh?
That's what atheists believe. There is no God.
Exactly. We just don't think it's the case. One of the arguments that we use in the book is called the folly of the lottery problem. And this establishes that, look, so let's imagine that maybe one religion actually is true. How would you go about figuring out which religion is the true one? I mean, if you really wanted to do the due diligence, you'd have to actually attend each one of these religious services and read their holy book and read the analysis of it. It's something that would take you, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of man hours to do, and no one has that kind of time. The reality is that there's so many different choices of religion and so many choices of sex within those religions that there's no reason to think that you would pick the right one ultimately.
Yeah. Number eight, we act morally when the happiness of others makes us happy. So
right.
That's how we stay on the narrow, we want to make other people happy, and we will act morally then.
Exactly. This is the idea of cooperation also, that people who are happy and who are not cheaters in life, people who are effective, who are effectively fair, are going to fare much better over the long run than people who are, cheaters or who are going to try to take advantage of others. Actually, being kind of a fair actor and an honest actor is the best course for success in our view.
Well, there are others, but we have full lines, and I do want to get to some of our callers, and we'll start with Rich in Rhinelander. Hello, Rich.
Hi. Thank you. A friend here in the Minocqua area, which for your guests needs to know is in far northern Wisconsin, who has close alliances with the Lac du Flambeau people, at a discussion at a church said, if you asked a native person, what is your religion? And I'm not painting, trust me, I'm not painting native peoples as atheists at all. They would be bewildered by that question because they would say, what do you mean is my religion? My religion is what I do with my life. It's how I conduct my life. And I think young people today see that there's a lot of attack Christianity and Judaism and Islam and other things where there are things said that are condemnatory of others if they don't belong to the group. And if people Googled the Native American Code of Ethics, they'd find like 20 points of guidelines for how to conduct one's life. And so I think it isn't the words you say to one another or in one another's presence on a Sunday. It's actually what you do with your life. And that's why people are so attracted to the idea of saying that's all that matters.
Very well said.
Thank you very much, Rich. Donna in Burlington is with us. Hello, Donna.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm really, really glad that you came out with this book because I haven't come across one like this. And I talk with a lot of people who are Christian, And I recently read a poll that said that atheist was the group, the one group that people in this country trusted the least amount. And my question is, I was going to say something about politics and religion, but given what you're talking about, I think probably what would be more relevant is when we see all the wars that are going on in the world, so many of them seem to be rooted in religious disagreements. And I wondered if you agreed with that or if you knew what the percentage of that was.
John Figdor?
Sure. Thank you for the question. I think that certainly religion, unfortunately, in our modern times, is a major source of conflict. We see it in the Israel-Palestine conflict most clearly, although we do see it in many other different ways in our society. We see it in our Islamophobia problem. We see it kind of in many different ways refracted in our society. And we keep talking. It's interesting. You brought up these poll results that show that atheists are distrusted. I think that that's historically the case, although now with this new data out there showing that, you know, almost half of people under the age of 30 are non-religious and 40% of all Americans are non-religious, it's really hard to be prejudiced against that many people. I mean, it would get tiring after a while. So out here in Silicon Valley, where I live and where Lex lives, you know, San Francisco is 45% non-religious. San Jose is 45% non-religious. We're living in a place where people recognize that non-religious people have values and ought to be respected and regarded equally. And I think that we're going to see that attitude permeate out throughout the rest of the country over time. It certainly was the case that people were tolerant in Boston and in New York City, where I'm from originally, and out here, the West Coast, it's very similar.
So you just think, do you think that non-believers, that atheists do feel comfortable enough to express that they are atheists?
I think that they increasingly are. I think that in the past it was a very scary thing to admit, but nowadays there's so many people who are out there in the public eye who are non-religious, who are secular, who show people that you know, atheists are not nasty, mean people. They're people who run successful nonprofits. They're people who, you know, advocate for human rights. They're people who are just as moral as religious people. And so I think that this view of atheists as bad people, this kind of bigoted view of atheists, I think that's going to disappear over time. And I just think it's hard to persecute people when you are, you know, performing the same service projects with them. When you're volunteering at the homeless shelter and you find out that, you know, 30 or 40% of the people volunteering there are atheists or agnostics. It's hard to hate people who you spend so much time with and you share so many core values with.
Well, and our caller did bring up this survey. The survey, the Pew survey in July found that even if record numbers of Americans are non-believers and identifying as such, we don't feel particularly warmly about them. It found that atheists and Muslims were tied for the lowest ranking in the survey. So there is some distrust, some resentment, some fear there, John.
I think that that's because that gets stoked up by people on the extreme right wing of the religious right who want to portray atheists as awful, mean people or as Satanists and all sorts of silly things like that. And I think that for most people, at least most people that I interact with on the Stanford campus and when I was at Harvard and, you know, living in New York, I did not encounter a lot of people who thought atheists were nasty and mean people. I think that's an old-fashioned way of looking at things, and I don't think that's going to survive much longer. I think that, you know, as people start realizing that more and more of their neighbors are secular Americans, and I mean, you can even do looking at what atheist agnostics believe. We should be excited about there being more atheist, agnostic, and humanist voters. These are the people who are most opposed to the Iraq war in the first case. These are the people who are the most opposed to torture. These are the people who are the strongest in condemning the death penalty as unjust. So I'm really excited about this. And as people learn that atheists have a deep and abiding moral compass and one that helps them live lives of meaning and value without a belief in God, I think they're going to become more and more comfortable with their non-religious neighbors. And I've experienced this. I've lived in parts of the country where there are very few non-believers. I lived in Butte, Montana for a while, and it's a very small town out in frontier Montana. And even there, people were comfortable with me as a secular person. They knew that I was a non-believer, and that wasn't a problem. So I think that we're heading into a new period in America where there isn't so much bigotry towards non-believers. But it's incumbent on us to come out as atheists and agnostics and humanists to make it easier for others to follow and to become non-religious and to announce what they do and don't believe.
Michael in Milwaukee is with us next. Hello, Michael.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say that I do agree wholeheartedly with the guest. I'd like to point out the problem, I think, with religious ethics. It's important to believe for the right reasons, to be good for the right reasons. When you connect an afterlife, a reward, an ultimate reward system, or an ultimate punishment system, heaven and hell, with being good, the actor tends to be hypocritical. They tend to be good only to get that reward or to avoid that punishment. I believe atheists, on the other hand, have a moral system because it works. I think rationally realize that they're not the only person in the universe, that their life is finite and they have to live among other people and one has to get along. Not only that, but I think we've evolved with a system of feelings and empathy towards other people where we see someone in pain or suffering and we naturally go to them and want to render aid. I think these are the good reasons to be good, to be ethical, not to look for that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. The whole thing turns out to be kind of a nasty ethic or a hypocritical ethic, as many philosophers have pointed out.
Do you agree with that, John?
Yeah, I do think that the fact that it's not a system of reward and punishment is definitely helpful to the atheist view of morality. It gives you a moral view that isn't imposed on you by some kind of divine commander who's going to tell you what it is. Instead, you have to work out these morals for yourself, and I think that's a real advantage that we have.
Thank you, Michael. Matt in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Matt.
Hello. I just had a question for your caller on his thoughts about, you brought up earlier the internet and its ability as far as education and kind of changing the tide of people's thoughts. But a lot of studies have shown that happiness has a deep root in religion for a lot of people. But it's not because of their beliefs. It's because of the social aspect. The core, we're all social creatures. And the internet, I guess, on the social side of that, with social media, online communities, replacing that need that the people could only get in the past from the church.
And so that's your theory a matter. Did you have a question about that?
Yeah, you guys just thought that they think that may be one of the reasons why there may be more, especially the under 30 population, moving towards more of an atheist group because they don't need the church to satisfy that social need.
Because we are social on social media now. John?
Yeah, that could be part of it. I actually think it's pointing to something else also, which is Robert Putnam has done research on this that shows that, this was a few years ago, that showed that religious Americans were technically better citizens than non-religious Americans because they vote in slightly higher numbers, they donate more money to charity and to secular charities, and they do a couple other things. I think they volunteer more at certain organizations. But they did research again, and they found out that for secular people who are members of churches or for secular people who are members of atheist or humanist communities who still get that community aspect, that coming together to do service projects, that those people are actually as good citizens. And what we're actually pointing at is the idea that community is very important to people. For example, if you took two groups of people and you had five people who were going to individually work to advance a cause, say it's stopping some kind of ban on voting or something like that, so some kind of voter suppression measure, and you took another five people and you told them to collaborate together on the same issue, who do you think is going to accomplish more at the end of, 5 weeks? Well, my money is going to be on the group because they're going to come together. They're going to share resources. They can, the sum is often better. The whole is often better than the sum of the parts. There's so much that we can do collaboratively there.
Let me ask you this. A lot of people who are religious might might look forward to the afterlife because it makes death less scary. But that thought of the afterlife also comforts the survivors that, you know, their loved one is in a peaceful place and in this eternal life. What do atheists believe? I mean, how do atheists find comfort around death?
I'm actually deeply skeptical of the idea that the afterlife really provides any serious comfort for people. In fact, at Harvard Divinity School, we were doing research. We found out that secular people often have an easier time coping with the dying process because there's no metaphysical worries. They're not worried about going to hell. They're not worried about, you know, did I do enough good acts in my life? Did I commit enough sins? It's a different perspective. So I think that coming from a view of the afterlife not really making sense to us that just seems like a better way of living. It just doesn't seem to make sense to live one's life expecting a reward in the afterlife. What if you're wrong? I mean, it would seem like a waste to live your life for something that doesn't actually exist. In our view, and this is definitely the humanist position, what's important about life is what happens after you're born and before you die. The rest, who knows? Maybe there's something there, but we certainly know that life is for the living. And I think atheists can give just as much comfort to people who are dying. We don't have to say fairy tales to people. We don't have to tell them that they're going to live forever in the afterlife with all their friends and family. We can honestly say, look, this person is gone. They lived their life and they died, and we are going to die someday too. But this person will always live on in the influences they've had over other people, in the things that they've done in the world to make the world a better place. And through that way, they have their immortality of a type.
Vivian in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. I'm 69. I don't believe in God. I wouldn't take that belief away from any of my friends or folks who do, because if they have a system in which they find comfort, why would I even want to take that away? My simple belief is we need to leave the world better than we found it, whether it's a brief encounter with someone and the opportunity we have to improve their day, or offering lifelong support to friends and relatives. We're as mortal as other beings. All you have to do is spend some time out in nature, in the woods. Death is absolutely everywhere. I don't believe that there's a hereafter. People tell me I don't believe in God because I'm angry, because the love of my life died 13 years ago. And my response is, are you kidding? If I believed there were a hereafter, I would be working hard to get there, because then he and I would be reunited. I believe that maybe we don't believe in God, but I think Christ certainly could have been a person who had great influence. After all, we're still reading Shakespeare 500 years later. My children have some issues. They're in their 30s. Finding people with whom they can connect, and they were raised with a religion, as was I. But over time, I think I've evolved to be non-religious, and I certainly don't believe in God. So, a lot of topics. I'm sorry, but
well, no, you were telling us what you believe, and John, that's what you think non-believers should do.
Well, let me tell you, that was very nice for sharing that. I want to encourage you to enter that in our contest. So before, we were talking about this idea of why we think coming up with your own commandments is so important. My co-author in this context, the Silicon Valley entrepreneur Lex Bayer, has put up a $10,000 Rethink Prize, where people can submit their beliefs on our website at www.atheistmindhumanistheart.com. And then they can share that link with their friends and with others who can vote on it. And a panel of celebrity judges will ultimately select 10 winners who will each receive a $1,000 prize. So this is an opportunity for you to think about your beliefs and maybe even win something for yourself at the end of the day.
Well, I didn't know that you had the contest going on. We'll certainly put your website up on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page so people can find a link there. And we will continue.
Right, and that runs through the month of November.
Okay. All right. And thank you, Vivian, for calling. Well, before I take the break, Vivian did make reference to, besides telling us all the things she believes in, that if religious people find comfort in believing, that she would never want to take that away from them. Do you, do atheists want to take a religion away from people?
No. Look, if someone tells me the reason that I wake up in the morning is because of my belief in God, or the reason that I'm a moral person, the reason that I don't go and murder people is because I believe in God, for that person, maybe a belief in God is necessary. Maybe they really do need to believe in God. I don't think it's very attractive look on us for us to try to tear down people, things people find very important. At the same time, though, I don't think that we should stop talking about these things out of respect for people's beliefs. I think that, you know, if you believe in God, that's fine, but you shouldn't be offended by the fact that there are people out there who don't believe in God.
John Figdor is a humanist chaplain serving the atheist, humanist, and agnostic communities at Stanford University. He holds a Master of Divinity degree from Harvard Divinity School. He is co-author with Lex Baer of Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart, Rewriting the Ten Commandments for the 21st Century. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So what do you think of our guests' ideas here, these non-commandments? What are your, where do your values come from? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Atheism is on the rise in the United States, especially among young people. We're talking about what accounts for the rise and how America's atheists can find a common ground for questions of morality. We are talking with a guest who is he's a chaplain for the atheists and agnostics and humanists at Stanford University, John Figdor. And our next caller is Michael in Appleton. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead, please.
Okay, well, I'm actually calling, I'm an atheist myself, but I'm calling with two sort of points. Excuse me. One is I actually have a small sort of nitpick was one of the things the guest has referenced, which is the poll numbers referring to the almost half of young people as specifically non-religious. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that those numbers, that percentage is actually a percentage of people who don't identify with any particular sect or denomination or church. So what I think that is actually the number of people who don't have a regular church that they attend. And so, but I don't think that precludes them from a belief in God. So I don't necessarily think that all of those people are non-religious.
Well, let's address that, John.
So thank you. Really good point. This has actually been true of many other statistical polls, but this poll has a definition of essentially post-Christian or post-religious or essentially secular, which is not praying, not believing in God, and not attending church on a regular, on any basis except for weddings and funerals or a baby naming ceremony. So this is actually pretty much people who are secular. These are people who do not participate in religious life in any way.
Well, I appreciate the clarification, Ben, because that is news to me. Then I guess my second point is just that earlier in the discussion when it was brought up, I think the question was essentially, you know, if atheists don't have a religion or have a belief in God, you know, what gives them their morals? And I think that is sort of an invalid argument, because if you take that viewpoint, then if looking at it another way, that would say, well, if tomorrow morning there was definitive proof that there was no God, does that mean that everybody who was previously religious would then go around stealing and murdering because there's no God to keep them moral anymore. And so, I think humans have sort of a base morality regardless. So I don't think that the question of, if you don't have religion, what keeps you moral is a valid one.
Yep.
I agree with you. That's actually a good point. I don't think that people need religion to make them moral. I don't think that we would have ever evolved to the point at which our species has evolved if we believed, for example, that murder was a good idea. I just don't think we would have made it out of the plains of Africa at that point. So I certainly agree that we have morals, but I do think that religion can be a problem because it can hijack these moral views, and it can make people do bad things for a bad reason. This is the problem. So we find this with, like, the really horrific anti-gay stuff that goes on the far end of the Christian right, or the really hardcore anti-abortion stuff as well. So you end up giving people bad reasons to have bad beliefs.
You know, Stephanie in Janesville in this email says, I consider myself Christian, but I can understand the scientific reasons behind an atheist belief system. I am wondering, though, how much of the current increase in atheism is a reaction to the negative behaviors of fundamentalists of various religions, including Christianity, towards others?
So, yeah, that's such a good point.
So you think that's involved? That's why more young people are non-believers?
Yeah, I mean, the abundant hypocrisy of some of these figures on the far end of the religious right who have been caught in some of the most ridiculous, scandalous behavior. I mean, literally, methamphetamine with prostitutes. It's really hard to take them seriously. And it's funny, the people who claim to have the perfect view of morality and claim to have God as their personal friend, some of these people have done and covered up for some of the most awful, awful actions that you and I could ever contemplate. I mean, we're including the Roman Catholic Church and the sexual abuse scandal with children. I mean, it's very hard to see. The hypocrisy of religion is just so clear these days that I think that's certainly part of what fuels this negativity, is the belief that, geez, I mean, if this is what people think morality is, then count me out. I'm not interested in this at all.
Roger in Sauk County is with us. Hello, Roger.
Good morning. Thanks for I didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I'm glad to tune in. I just had a comment that I really don't like the term non-believer. I prefer there are atheists and there are believers for a couple reasons. One, that when you call atheists non-believers, it is in relationship or relevance to Christians or to believers, which at a subtle point elevates them, saying this is the standard to be compared to. So I look at it that, and also, so I really don't like that term, and also I think that atheists do have beliefs.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right, so I don't know if it's semantics or not, but atheists are really not non-believers, John?
Yeah, it's a good point because, it only focuses on the negative, right? I understand the problem with why people don't like the term non-believer. They say, why do you focus on what we don't believe? Why don't we focus on what we do believe? And that's why a lot of people like the word humanist, because it explicitly identifies the positive beliefs and values of people. It's things like their belief in the scientific method is the way to understand the world. Things like ethics ought to be based in the human experience, that kind of stuff. And so I think there's definitely a need for new language for this, and it's hard for us atheists, humanists, agnostics to come together. You see the awkwardness of me using all three of those words all the time. It's because we haven't picked one word to use. Like, Christian could mean Catholic, or could mean Mormon, or could mean Protestant, or could mean evangelical. So, we need eventually some kind of a catch-all term to refer to the atheists, humanists, and agnostics, but until we come up with it, I'm just going to keep using as many different words and letting people use whatever terminology suits them best.
So why do the atheists and or the humanist and agnostic communities at Stanford University need a chaplain?
That's a great question. So what humanist chaplains do is provide a number of different services to the campus and to the local community. One of the things that we do is we provide counseling and support for students many of whom are away from home for the first time in their lives or away from their home country for the first time in their lives, and they're trying to deal with life in an elite academic institution like Stanford, which is just such a high level, such a difficult academic environment. In addition to that counseling and support role that we play, we also organize regular programs and activities for the community, bringing speakers onto campus, such as Richard Dawkins or Greta Christina, folks like that. And then we also do large-scale service events that we often do in conjunction with other religious groups, which brings me to another point I wanted to make, which is we focus so much on how atheists differ from religious people. It's really nice to talk about how we can come together with religious people and what kind of core values we share in common with them. And these are things like, you don't have to believe in God to believe that no one should go to bed hungry at the end of the night, or that every kid deserves to have access to a good education. And these are things that Christians, Jews, Muslims, atheists, Hindus, the whole spectrum, we can all agree on these things. And so we think that by talking to people about our positive values as atheists and humanists, we'll be more welcomed by some of these other religious groups, and it'll make service even easier to be together.
On October 30th, a federal district court in Oregon officially recognized secular humanism as a religion under the Establishment Clause of the Constitution. An inmate wanted to have a humanist study group in his prison. Your reaction to that ruling, and how significant is that ruling?
So my understanding of this, going back to First Amendment jurisprudence, is that historically the Supreme Court had a definition of religion, which is that which occupies the highest place in your conscience. I forgot which Supreme Court case established this. It might be Lemon Test or something like that. But someone who's more constitutionally schooled than I am can provide the reference in your comments. But in any case, my understanding was at this point, at that Supreme Court decision, anything that serves as your highest, the source of your moral values, your highest values, that would be your religion. So for humanists, that would be humanism. This district court ruling simply reaffirms that, I think. And it's really great to see another court finding, yes, that secular humanists deserve the same rights and protections as religious organizations. And that's something that we think is key, making sure that we get treated equally to religious believers. There should be no special religious rights that are available only to people who happen to believe in God.
I had one last very quick question from Andrew in Madison.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
Tying together a lot of the things that you said, I think, talking about morality, talking about our connections to Christians, talking about the constitutional law issue, I was curious about the role of atheists in politics and our political society and the fact that we're often ostracized because of perception that we lack morality or can't have the same morality as the Christian majority within our country or other religious majorities.
Thank you, Andrew, because we're so short on time. At least we're not openly electing atheists to, high offices. Do you see that changing, John?
I certainly do, and we do have a case of I believe at least one atheist being reelected. Juan Mendez won a House seat in Arizona this year, I know. And I think that if you actually talk to some members of Congress, some members of the Senate, one-on-one, privately, you'll get a different answer to the religion question than you'll get on the news. And I think this does speak to the public prejudice against atheists and humanists. But like I said before, as our numbers increase and as more and more non-believers come out of the closet, and more people are proud to announce that they're good without God, I just think that maintaining this prejudice is not going to be possible. It's just not going to make sense in the light of knowing so many compassionate and empathetic atheists and humanists.
Thank you so much for being with us. John Figdor is co-author of Atheist Mind, Humanist Heart. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.